So we'll take a couple of minutes of a break. Let's see if you can stay present in your arms and your legs while we move, stretch, go to the toilet. So yesterday we began to look into what we call our inner judge, our inner critic. And we're going to look deeper into it this morning and also tonight. It's actually wonderful to see how many of you are really aware of having an inner critic. I remember it took me many, many years to really become aware that there was one. Because sometimes we are so identified with its messages that we really don't see it. We're not aware. We're so believing the judge that we don't see it's something that's really not us. That's an add-on. Rob called it hot air. So we're going to have a look, closer look, to where does this, the inner critic, that we begin to see how pervasive it is. Where did it originate? And what is its function, actually? As we reveal to you as teachers, also, we still have a judge. Maybe a disappointment for you, but the truth is, as long as we are not fully realized out of our ego, there is a superego. There is a critic in us. So that means that for a long, long, long time along on the journey, this will stay with you, the inner critic. However, it gets more and more subtle, way more subtle, harder to detect. The most obvious messages have dissolved at some point. But the critic stays. So how come? What is its function? And where did it originate? Well, many of you may be aware how it, and some of you gave in the feedback already commentary that you noticed your father said how dumb you were. And you believed it at that time as a kid. So you begin to hear the voices maybe of your mother, your father, that told you those messages, that had those standards that you didn't measure up to in their eyes, that had reprimands whenever you did something that they considered as wrong or bad or maybe dirty or felt it was not appropriate. And those messages came often in verbal messages, but also often they came in a non-verbal way. They came by looks. Well, you got it. Oh, something is off here. Or by gestures, like go away, or shut up. Or by intonations, that there is really a charge in a message. It's not so much the message itself, but there is a charge, an energetic charge in the message that made you shrink or startle. So also nonverbal messages of our parents really got to us and threatened us and made us be aware that we crossed a line that we were not supposed to cross. As children, we're very wild and dynamic and alive, mostly, most children are. Some are very sweet and more shy. And these messages that come to us through our parents, through our main caretakers, impact us in a way that it dims our aliveness. So, for instance, your mother was depressed. She couldn't tolerate much of your aliveness and your dynamism. And you were told constantly, shh, be silent, get out the door, go play outside. I can't tolerate that. And in the beginning, you are not even aware of your dynamism and your aliveness. But after a repetitive pattern of having received those messages, you get it. You have to dim down. You have to tone down your alive energy. Maybe you were a very curious kid and you wanted to explore things. Maybe you wanted to explore what's in the couch or what's in the television. Where's that lady in the television? I don't see her, but she's there showing up every afternoon or evening, and you start to pull out the television. Maybe you hammer on it. Well, that's a good way to make your parents very upset, of course. So they will probably shout at you, punish you, blame you, reject you for doing things like that. Or maybe you were a little girl and you really loved your mother and how she looks. And you thought, oh, I'm going to try out to make myself up, try out her lipstick. And you were having a great time with your girlfriend or your late little sister, and you were making your lips really red and ruining the lipstick of your mother. And your mother came out, and she found you, and she was furious. You ruined my lipstick. Look what you did with all my clothes out of the cupboard. So again, these reprimands or blames made us know what was acceptable and what was not acceptable. And I'm sure you have many examples, if you think back, of what was happening for you at the time. Some very sweet girls or boys, you know, they want their mother to make her happy, and they pluck the flowers from the garden of the neighbor. They don't know that they're not supposed to pluck those flowers. They just want to make their mother happy. So they come with the flowers, and your mother is like, where do they come from? She knows those flowers are not in your garden, or you don't have a garden. And the neighbor calls her, and she's made ashamed, and she dumps it all on you. So also your parents have their own fears, their own rules, inner rules, what they think is acceptable. And the rules are being transmitted to you in a way to let you know what's acceptable when you are lovable, when you're not lovable, how you're supposed to be or not to be. And in that way, those rules have a function to socialize you, to make you be acceptable, first of all in the family, but also in the larger community, in the society. And different families, therefore, may have different rules, different critics, reprimands. You were reprimanded. Maybe your neighbor friend was reprimanded for different things than you were, because the situation was different. Maybe your mother couldn't handle very dynamic and alive children. She was afraid of her own anger, maybe. So every time you were angry, she couldn't handle that. And you had to, and she told you how bad you are for being angry. Maybe she even told you, I don't love you. You're really bad. You're a bad girl if you say things like that to me. Or you're wrong. You're not perfect. You don't do that. Or maybe they're saying, and it can be your mother or it can be your father, saying, you're very selfish. You never think of your brothers and your sisters. You always take whatever you want. You're not supposed to take everything you want, all the cookies, all the toys. Give them to your sister, to your brother. So all these threats and reprimands and messages were there to guide you, to help you know how you can be, how you're supposed to be. They guide you and they help you to know not only in your behavior, actually, how to be, but also feelings. Certain feelings are not acceptable. Like in my generation, boys were not supposed to cry. You're wimpy. Maybe that's different now. I would be curious. Maybe boys have to be vulnerable these times and open and not macho. That's bad. Girls may get the message you have to be independent these days. So also the times changes the cultural morals. I'm sure that in Kuwait, for instance, there are different messages than, let's say, Norway. And that's interesting also. And so there's definitely also the larger culture that supports those messages. And yet in every family, those messages can be slightly different. What's acceptable for your mother may not be for your cousin or your friend's mother. So socializing is a big function. And then another function of knowing these inner rules is when we go to school at age 4, 5, we go to kindergarten, we step into the world. By that time, we have kind of swallowed in those messages. We have taken them in. We've made them their own. We've adapted and accommodated to the messages. And that helps us to move into the world, to move away from our parents and still know that they are somehow around inside of us, guiding us. So now when we are in the group, in the kindergarten, we know we are not supposed to take all the toys of the other kid. So that makes us feel guided when we step out of our family situation. And in that sense, it also starts to function as our conscience. Do you know what conscience is? Gewissen, is that the German? Yeah, Gewissen. Right? So we take them to be, okay, I should be like this. So again, these messages can come through blames, through real messages, but also through evaluations. You're very sweet when you are helpful. I really love you when you are helpful. You're a good kid. Or you're really good. So also in positive messages, these standards can have a big effect on us in terms of, oh, as long as I'm sweet, I'm okay. But what about my anger? Mom won't love me then. So when we move into the world, we have our conscience now, and we know how to behave. We know now how to behave in the larger society. So in some sense, when we moved into the bigger society, having these guidelines made us be capable in some sense of being independent and autonomous. We could leave our parents home, or our parents went to work, stayed at home, and we were going to school. So our first independence, our autonomy, moving into the world, was really supported by having our conscience, these inner messages and standards with us, carrying with us. However, we never stopped carrying these messages with us, and we still do, and up to the day of today. Now we are in our 30s, our 40s, our 50s, our 60s. We still carry in a certain way our parents around. We still believe these messages, often by not being aware of them, that we behave still like this kid that was supposed to be a certain way, to be safe in a certain, Rob called it a bandwidth, like, you know, you can move between this line and that line. Or the bandwidth may be this for some kids, maybe this for some kids, but still there is a bandwidth that you're not supposed to move out from. And to stay in within the bandwidth is safe, is familiar. And that is a very important function of our inner critic. We are safe as long as we move within this territory. We know what we can expect. We know how to be. We know how to behave. We know when we are approved of or not. And we often project that now out on our environment. And we stay within those limits, meaning it keeps our energy, our juice down. We can have only so much juice, so much aliveness. Otherwise, we will threaten that bandwidth, those lines. And the inner critic makes us know, don't cross those lines. And often we can feel it like alarm bells. Like blinking red lights. Don't go there. So these messages are warnings. Don't step over the boundary. Don't be your spontaneous self. You will be rejected, blamed, not loved. People will think you're weak when you say, for instance, what you want, or maybe you fear to be needy if you say what you want. Maybe you believe they won't be able to handle my anger, my strength. I'm supposed to be, you know, adapted. And these messages, as we saw yesterday already, can change as we move into different communities, like for instance here. You know, maybe you start to have a sense that now special things are expected of you here. For instance, we tell you to be present as much as you can. Well, what if you're not practicing that the whole day? Maybe you start to beat yourself up for that. I should be present. The teachers tell me to be present. Or you don't meditate. Look what you do. You don't meditate in your life. How will you ever be a good student? So again, it's blaming you. Blaming you for not living up to the standards that you believe you should live up to. Maybe there are even other messages that you pick up. I'm actually curious to hear if you are aware of those. So, yeah?
Be on time.
Be on time, yeah. So being on time is also functional. That's the whole purpose, right?
Meditation,
to say again, you should meditate, is the judge. Wherever there's this should, you should be like that, you can be sure there is a judge. Because if you don't meditate, it means it devalues you as being bad or wrong or not up to it. So being on time is definitely functional, so that we don't have to wait, all of us. So that's one of the socializing functions. That's actually still very functional. Yeah? You should not reject anything. Okay, right, yeah. So you should accept everything. Ah, yeah. Yeah, that can be very threatening inside also, of course. Okay, now I should come up with all my feelings that I really fear. Right, so that's also a good one. So all those shoulds are telling us there's an evaluation behind it. You know, you have to be courageous. You are a coward, for instance, if you reject your feelings. That's actually the sentence behind it, for instance, right? Yeah. So it's important to see how believing the inner critic, living up to its standards, living up to its evaluation, keeps us within the status quo in what we know already of ourselves, how we know ourselves, what we believe is acceptable. And every time we want to cross that line, it will cause fear in us. The alarm bells will blink. Don't cross that line. You will lose the love of your parents, the appreciation. They won't be proud of you. They will reject you. So staying within the status quo and the familiar territory is the job of the inner critic. That's really its job, to keep you exactly where you are. To be safe in that way, to feel safe. So the truth of the matter is that you have all come here to not stay where you are. You know where you are, and there's this, the flame in you, the longing to move. So it's very likely that every time we open up a little bit, the judge will come and get at you. The judge will tell you how stupid you were to speak up in the group. Now everybody will know how deficient you are. You shouldn't have done that. Or every time you have an essential experience, which is really new territory. It's beyond what we know, what we feel. It's of an other realm. It will maybe criticize that and put you back in the box, because that's really what its job is, to put you back in the job, in the box. And that's not a bad thing. It used to be not a bad thing, because as we saw, its job was to help you, to protect you against reprimands, punishments, blame. It guided you what was acceptable and not. It tried to support you by being in a certain way and not being vulnerable, for instance, to blame and hurt. So the inner critic really doesn't know that you have grown up now. That maybe its job is not what it used to be when you were 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. That you are actually capable of taking care of yourself. That you can actually test a reality test. Do people criticize me, or is it actually okay when I show my deficiency, that I don't know something, that I feel hurt? Is it still unacceptable, or is it safe enough now, here, to show my hurt, to show my anger, my hatred, my resistance? Or will I be punished for it still? So as a grown-up, the function of the judge is different than when we were a kid. Let me put it different. When we were a kid, we needed the judge. But do we still need it now as we used to? Is it still functional for us? Or is it now limiting us? Is it limiting our expansion, our aliveness, our juice, our power, our strength, our sweetness? So that's why we are looking into what it does for us, how it keeps us in our place. And we need to question that. We need to start to differentiate that those were the messages of our parents, the truths of our parents. And they may not be our truth, may not be what we value, what we think is important, how we want to be, what my heart tells me what's truth. True. So we need to make a differentiation between the messages of our parents and our own standards, our own truth, basically. Our own truth. So that's why we want to bring out our inner judge into the light, really look it into the face, so we can see it, we can see what it does for us, and especially how it keeps us in place, and how we reject our spontaneous self in that way. A potential. So we're going to do an exercise this morning to look more into this. And the exercise is an exercise in which each of you will address your judge directly, and it goes and it goes as follows. We're going to do it in twos again, and this time not 10 minutes each but 15 minutes. So one person asks the other person for 15 minutes the question, and then after the 15 minutes this person asks the other person the same question. And then you move to the next question. Yeah, that is, the structure is clear, right? Okay, so person A, Mrs. Jones, how's that? Mrs. Jones asks, Mr. Apple, judge. So you're addressing the judge of Mr. Apple now. Judge, tell me an attack you use to keep Mr. Apple in his place. It's a little complicated. So I'll make it simpler. A asks B. Let's see if it's simpler. A asks B. Judge, so this one is talking. Judge, tell me what attack you use to keep B in his place? And the judge answers, I tell him how a bad father he is. He's never at home. Thank you. Judge, tell me what attack you use to keep B in his place? I tell him how he's lousy and lazy every time he hangs out for the television. Thank you. Judge, tell me an attack you use to keep B in her place. I tell her how selfish she is. She's very selfish by never calling her mother, or not calling her mother enough, who is sick. Thank you. Do you get the flavor? That's sure. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. Right. So what's your name again? Yeah? Oliver. Yeah. So it says, judge, tell me what attack you use to keep Oliver in his place. Right? And then Oliver answers. So is it clear? Okay, good. So this is the first question. 15 minutes, so you really have a chance to get to know how your judge attacks you all the time. Then we go to the second question. A, B. What is right about keeping Oliver, Mary, whoever, in his or her place? What is right about keeping Emma in her place? Right, so the question is actually again addressed towards the judge. So you let the judge talk why what he or she considers is right about that. Now, if you can't find an answer, don't get caught up in your mind. Let yourself be spontaneous. What a rotten question this is. Thank you. And there you go again. And see if you can find an entrance somewhere. Yeah? Maybe you suddenly feel, oh, I'm supposed to come up with a good answer. So I'm judging her. She's coming up with lousy answers. Thank you. Yeah? You just take it from, again, see if you can get in some kind of a movement with it. Not squeeze your mind too much. Okay, so altogether this is an hour, so we'll be back here by 5 to 12.